agenda. The 8:30 agenda item, which is management area coordination. There's a presentation behind tab one, document number 10. Deirdre, are you going to lead us through that?
Thank you. Good morning. I'm going to give a presentation called Management Area Coordination, and this was a request from the January Council meeting. The issue came up several times during that meeting in terms of what's the best way to kind of address all the different closures we have. And I guess I, as it's been mentioned, pulled the short straw on this topic. It's not really completely related to scallops, a little bit, but anyway, here I am. But this is a document that the entire staff has reviewed. Several of us have worked on it more closely, but for whatever reason, I get to present it today, and Tom and Michelle have agreed to answer all the questions. So that's the deal that we have. The document is behind tab one. Document number six is actually the kind of several-page written document, and I'm not sure if this presentation has a number or not, but it has a very fancy cover. Number 10, thank you. Just to get your attention, we have those bright colors there. So at the January Council meeting, just to step back a few months, as I mentioned, under both the habitat and groundfish reports, the Council was, you know, slightly struggling about, you know, which came first, how can we discuss the possible initiation of a new groundfish action to consider eliminating the groundfish mortality closed areas. And it went back and forth, and ultimately a motion was passed to table the discussion until this council meeting, after there was an opportunity and request of the staff to primarily visually try to identify what this issue is, summarize some of the overall overlapping issues going on between phase two of the habitat amendment and the existing groundfish mortality closures. And then the request also included to possibly identify some solutions in how the council could best address these issues. So as I said, document number six. Marine management areas in the Northeast. I'm going to divide this presentation into two parts. The first part is basically a visual overview of the relationship of all the various closures we do have in this region. Not all of them, but the ones that we were asked to focus on. And at the end, get into a little bit of a discussion of the complications and conflicts that come up with access to the fishery resources that are within those closures. Part two of the we'll discuss some options to potentially evaluate the effectiveness of these areas and possibly consider modifications. Staff has developed four different options. They're pretty wide-ranging in terms of their scope, one being closer to status quo and basically maintaining where we are with the EFH phase two. And then on the other spectrum, we have an option that would be a full-blown ecosystem-based management approach going from option one to option four. So starting with part one of the presentation, hopefully there are copies of this in the back. It's kind of hard to see up on the slide, but we just have an overlay of a few different maps to give you a sense of where we are. So what's on the screen right now is basically no action. It's displaying the groundfish mortality closures, which are the open polygons with the darker black background, the different groundfish mortality closures that have been in place since 1994. The hatched areas are the current EFH closures, which are closed to all bottom-tending mobile gears, and that has been the case since Amendment 13 to the Groundfish Plan. And then there are two gray areas that are the current HAPC designation areas, one on the northern edge of Georges Bank, the Cod HAPC, and then also some of the rivers in down east Maine that extend all the way through the state. That actually is an HAPC designation under the federal EFH amendment. So after Amendment 15, I'll just quickly point this out for the scallop fishery. If you recall, Amendment 15 will actually bring the EFH closures to be consistent with what's on the board. If you remember, there's a slight difference for the scallop fishery in closed area 1 and closed area 2. So once that Amendment 15 is approved, as the council adopted it anyway, if it is approved, the boundaries for the scallop fishery would be consistent with what is on the board. So these are the two HAPCs that exist. Now, the next slide covers basically where phase one of the EFH amendment completed and what it was finished. Again, it's not adopted yet, but for the council's purposes, it's gone through the process. It's gone through final decisions from the council perspective. And really what it included primarily were the EFH designations and relooking at all of those, as well as looking at any HAPCs. The phase one so far did not recommend any changes to the two existing HAPCs. So the two gray areas I mentioned before, the rivers in Maine for salmon and the cod HAPC, still exist. No additional restrictions are considered or tagged on to those HAPCs. And phase one also includes five new additional HAPC designations. Just quickly go through them because it's kind of hard to see on the board. There's one that's basically the entire coastline, this pinkish area. That is a proposed inshore cod, inshore of 20 meters, HAPC, that's proposed in phase one. There's one in the western Gulf of Maine, which is exactly the same boundaries as the current EFH closure in the western Gulf of Maine. So that's being designated as an HAPC. There's a slightly extended area within caches that's identified as an HAPC. And then this kind of crazy-shaped thing in the channel is another cod HAPC designation that's proposed. And then also these large offshore canyons, if you recall. So the council has already adopted that these five HAPCs, in addition to the two, for a total of seven, would be HAPCs designated in phase one. To be very clear, there are no fishing restrictions associated with these HAPC designations. Similar to the two that have been around for a longer period of time, the council has not to date tagged on any specific fishing restrictions related to these areas. The reason that there has been no fishing within the cod HAPC on the northern edge is because that is also designated as a habitat closure, not because it's an HAPC. So I think there's a lot of unease and concern that these HAPCs are going to eventually just become closures. But to be clear, the cod HAPC on the northern edge is closed because it's a habitat closed area and not because it's an HAPC. So if phase one continues and is approved ultimately as planned and repackaged together with phase two, these designations would become basically, you know, for the HAPCs in this region, all of those together. Now, phase two, which is kind of what I understand, kind of more where the Habitat Committee is right now, since phase one is more complete, the Habitat Committee has not developed specific measures related to specifically the different clusters that exist. I apologize, it's hard to see on the screen. But as Chad was describing yesterday, the SASE analyses have produced what are more accurately called LISA clusters. And those are clusters of areas of sediment and substrate that are more vulnerable to fishing. And there are two kind of, there's a lighter portion and a more dark focused portion. And from what I understand, the Habitat Committee is more focused on right now the darker portions of each of these clusters. For example, on George's Bank right here, there's a darker part of cluster 5, 6, and 7. These are identified as the areas that are most vulnerable to fishing within, you know, that region. And in the Gulf of Maine, you have four different clusters. And so far, it's very preliminary to really suggest that these maps are going to stay as they are. The Habitat Committee is now, I believe, at the phase of starting to refine these areas, maybe by depth and creating more regularly shaped areas, perhaps. But in terms of what these areas mean, this is just the beginning, and that the committee is, you know, just now going to say, are there going to be fishing restrictions? What are they going to be? The document, if you look at the alternatives now, is pretty wide-ranging, and they go as far as similar akin to a habitat closure now, that it would be closed to all bottom-tending mobile gears in these darker portions on George's Bank 5, 6, and 7, whereas in the Gulf of Maine, the focus of the alternatives is more about gear restrictions and gear-related measures and not necessarily closures. But again, it's really too early to say, and I'm sure David Preble could add to this, where they are in this process. it's very early. I'm just putting these because the request was to spatially get a better idea of where these areas even are. But again, fishing may completely be allowed in them and just be limited in scope, or they could be full closures. I think it's just too early to say for sure. So now this one's even harder to see up on the screen, but hopefully on the paper is okay. The sense from the council, or the request from the council in January, was to try to get a sense of, okay, if these habitat clusters end up being, you know, developed to some degree, what kind of fishing access impacts are we going to have, and how is this all going to work together? And what's kind of difficult to see, what I've put on here is a plot of scallop biomass from the 2010 federal survey. And the smaller dots, of course, are smaller toes, and the larger ones are larger toes. And pretty much there's a huge, as we've known, congregation of scallop biomass within the cod HAPC on the northern edge. And there's also quite a bit in the channel and through closed area one, which we've always known, and some always showing up in Nantucket Lightship, of course. So this is just trying to illustrate that in terms of the current LISA clusters, some are not very overlapping with the scallop fishery in terms of abundance, and some, you know, are in terms of portions of the channel. And again, this is just one example. We could, as I'm sure the habitat process develops, you'll see similar maps for all the different fisheries if you haven't already. There is interest in accessing from the scallop fishery. You've heard for years, very interested in getting into this area here. So I think in general, the idea that the Habitat Committee is moving away from the current EFH closures, and the analyses seem to support that they are not in the correct areas for protecting the most vulnerable habitats, and are probably actually in slightly different areas. So that, in terms of scallop biomass and fishery access, is good news to that industry as an example. But in terms of what the future would be for these different areas, you know, that's where we are in this discussion. So the last point here is just in terms of practicability that the staff would want to point out, as the council does consider more specific locations and levels of fishing restrictions in these potential new EFH LISA clusters. Fishery access does play an important role. We want to continue to emphasize that, and the overall practicability of these measures, which again was what Chad was getting through in the presentation yesterday, will be critical in terms of assessing, you know, which types of alternatives would work for practicability. So that was sort of the visual display. Hopefully it's what people had in mind in terms of being able to see on a few different charts what's on the board already, what's being considered. And again, I think it's important to just remind you that the LISA clusters are still very early, and you know, don't take too much in them going away from today. So moving into part two, what are the options for management area coordination for this council? We had some meetings at the staff to try to kind of brainstorm some ideas. We came up with four different options. Some are not very different from each other. We tried to identify the pros and cons and timing constraints related to all four of those. They are summarized in text and bullet form in document six, but also in a table. So you might want to take that table out as a quick reference. It's at the end of the document, pages 7 and 8, I think, that are an easier way to compare the different options for a particular topic if you're interested. Hopefully that's an easier way to compare them. After we had some discussions and, you know, kicked this document around within the staff, generally we're most supportive of option two, and I'll describe each of them on one slide at a time. Certainly, staff can adjust, and whatever the council decides, we would likely have to do some adjusting in terms of staffing them and committee roles and responsibilities and so forth. But weighing the different objectives that we think are important to the council, that being, I think we're at a phase where people are really ready for phase two to get done, and we really, you know, there's a great incentive to finish what was started and finish these habitat closures or measures, whatever they end up being, and then also trying to recognize if people do want to consider getting rid of or modifying the groundfish closed areas, that should be done very thoroughly and not just, you know, quickly looked over and done through. And so with thinking about those two things, overall, the staff is recommending option two. So option one. Option one is similar to how we're proceeding right now, with a little twist in the end. So basically, this option would proceed with phase two and continue with the Habitat team and the Habitat committee proceeding on phase two and developing EFH measures. The council would actually select what the final measures are, but the effectiveness would be delayed. So everyone would know up front what's happening with Habitat, what the future plan is for Habitat, but we would hold off on actually implementing them until a groundfish action could also be initiated and completed in 2012. So this one is similar to where the process is now, but you would hold off on that implementation so that you could join the two plans together sort of at the back end once you could let the groundfish process look at the groundfish closed areas. The benefits of this option would be that phase two stays on track, and that I think is important to some people, but the implementation of it would be later, and I think that's the key negative part about this alternative, actually, that would have some people concerned of any more delay, and primarily that's by leaving EFH areas that are closed now. I think it's becoming pretty clear that they should not be closed. So by holding this, delaying this implementation, as an example, the scallop fishing access programs and future frameworks could not consider realistically access into those areas until the EFH new measures are implemented. So you wouldn't gain too much in terms of future fishery access with this option in the short term. The cons of this, I kind of just led into, and it's related, that the current EFH closures would be effective longer, and that probably is the major con for this option. And potentially more resources, we're thinking, would be required if you have two separate actions. But I would point out that we think that's primarily on the NIMS review side of things. You know, it does take a certain amount of resources to get an action through all of the channels that are required of review and agency review. But in terms of actually on the council side of things, in terms of staff and PDTs and committee involvement, having two actions or one action, it'll take some time to kind of get up to speed and figure out what we're doing, but there's not going to be a huge difference, we don't think, on the staff side of things in terms of which one's more or less time. So timing, this one, basically, because you're going to hold off on that implementation, best case scenario, we think with this option would be May 1st, 2013, that you could have both new EFH measures and potentially modified groundfish closures in place and ready to go. Again, best case scenario, that's what's suggested with this one. That would be, according to the last timeline I saw, about 9 months later than if the EFH measures were implemented right away. I believe the target date is August 2012. So by delaying those EFH measures, you'd lose, and wanting to wait for the groundfish action, you'd lose those 9 months. So that's option one. The other ones will go faster because I'm going to just compare it. Option two. Option two is pretty much the same as option one, except you do not delay effectiveness of the EFH changes. So in our surmise of all of this, this is a major benefit of option two over option one, because basically phase two is allowed to stay on track. You go with the process, pick your EFH measures, with Habitat being the driving force, you change your EFH areas if you end up having them at all, and you implement them as soon as possible. Again, the last I saw was target implementation of August 2012. So at the same time, the council has to make a commitment in 2012 to work on a groundfish action to modify the groundfish closures. Overall, at the end of the day, I think right now the staff is a little more comfortable with these being separate actions. We think it might be a little cleaner in terms of the responsibilities of different PDTs and committees, and it's kind of just what we're more used to. So it may arguably be more cleaner than combining the two issues into one action. And the benefit of this one, as I mentioned before, is that you could arguably consider access into current EFH closures if they in fact are modified sooner. About one fishing year sooner, 2013, groundfish SAPs could arguably look at the cod HAPC, the scallop fishery, could possibly consider it in there in the 2013 fishing year, whereas option one, you'd maybe have to wait until 2014. So the cons, and this is a major con, definitely for people to be aware of with this option, the council's going to have to make decisions about the EFH areas without knowing for sure the status of the groundfish areas. I'm sure as the process goes along and if these two things are working in parallel a bit and if, you know, for example, the habitat action gets a little more delayed, they'll get a little closer. But you will have to make potentially decisions about EFH measures before you really know what you're doing with the groundfish closures. So that is a major con of option two. And again, I've mentioned I don't think the resource issue is important enough to really point out. I think it's pretty similar from the council's perspective, but from the agency's perspective, two actions is maybe a little bit more resources for review. Timing, arguably, if you do the EFH action, you stay completely on track as it's been described, those EFH areas could be modified by August 2012. And best case scenario, the groundfish, if resources are very dedicated in 2012, you could have that effective by May 1st, 2013. So there's that nine-month difference, but it does allow for potential access into current EFH closures in 2013 instead of waiting. So option three is a little different than option one and two. Option one and two have two actions, and option three is one action. So we basically put the brakes on phase two right now, today, and we say, okay, instead of starting a separate groundfish action to address or potentially modify groundfish closures, instead, we're going to slow down on habitat and expand it. We're going to take phase two and where it is, and we're going to say, let's expand it. We're not actually sure legally right now if we'd have to re-scope and actually have scoping meetings to expand that scope, or if we're kind of within what was scoped already. We'd maybe want to get some advice about that. But we would basically expand the scope. And the pros of this would be less actions to get through the process, as I mentioned, which is more of a agency thing, we believe. It could be implemented slightly faster than option one and two, and that's the groundfish side of things. If you believe that expanding the scope is not going to slow things down substantially, you could arguably... best cases that we went through sitting around was, I believe, March 1, 2013 instead of May. So we're not talking about a major gain of expanding them, but that is a potential. But probably the biggest benefit pro of this option would be that there's less unknowns for the council in terms of making decisions about your EFH measures. You're going to have a lot more confidence in what you're doing with EFH while you're making the same decisions on groundfish mortality closures. And that was mentioned in January as giving some people some unease and concern. The cons of this alternative would be that you are going to further extend the EFH timeline, and you don't want to forget about the effective date. Some concerns were also raised in January that we're sort of so many years beyond phase one at this point that there's a little concern about adding yet another thing to this already burdened amendment that there's just maybe this whole thing, you know, it'll get buried. So you're going to delay the effectiveness of all the other things from phase one by including this in phase two. We do believe there would be more coordination needed than there has been to date. There really has not been a whole lot of exchange between the various PDTs and committees to date on the assessment. And again, that's because the process hasn't really started, and I would expect that to increase quite a bit now that the Habitat Committee is at the stage of, you know, putting alternatives on the board and needing to involve other PDTs and committees about impacts. But that we are expecting is going to be pretty substantial, and there would need to be some kind of plan different than how we proceed now would have to be developed to really coordinate that and do that correctly so that important issues are not overlooked, specifically about the groundfish areas, you know, having a habitat committee overseeing this whole action. You don't want things to get lost in the shuffle in terms of the impacts of removing, if that's an alternative, the groundfish closed areas. So we were just a little wanted to point out a con that there could be less time to evaluate these details because there is this underlying pressure to finish the habitat amendment since it has been so long. So by adding the groundfish issues, it's just a concern. Timing, again, best case scenario, as I mentioned, this could be a little bit earlier than options 1 and 2, but I think we're talking a matter of months at this point and not a huge thing. The only other thing about option 3, and then I'll move on, is right now we're only talking about the groundfish mortality closed areas. It was hard to tell from the discussion in January. Some people were slipping into rolling closures and other things, so I think the council should be as specific as it can. What are we really talking about? If we're going to expand this action, the more you're actually going to talk about expanding it, you should, you know, realize all of that makes a difference. If we're really looking at rolling closures and other mortality-related issues of the groundfish plan, you know, I think you should make a clear distinction of what you're actually planning to expand if you go with option 3. So lastly, option 4, the most holistic approach would probably be to really put the brakes on everything and dive into ecosystem-based management. You heard the end of 3 presentations on this yesterday. Sitting here, I think it sounded like even what we have guessed on here as best case scenarios for timing, I really should push that back a couple of years because it does seem that, you know, to really bring in all of the different predator, prey, and other issues into refining these areas, this one would arguably be the most holistic. That's the benefit of it. But definitely the con is it's going to take years to do it. So in summary, if you are sitting at this table and, in your opinion, modifying EFH closed areas that are in the ocean now is your top benefit, top priority, then option 2 is the one that gets those done and addressed the fastest. If instead you're sitting there thinking modifying the groundfish areas is actually, you know, the top priority, the one that does it a little bit faster than option 2 is option 3. I just say that with the little bit thrown in there because I'm not totally, and I don't think most of the staff's totally convinced that it's really going to end up being faster at the end of the day. Option 4 is the most holistic, but it is going to take a lot of time. And I think the interest in doing these things together make a lot of sense in terms of not having to make a decision before you know what's going on with another plan. But the staff does have concerns about 3 just because it's different than how we normally proceed, and our track record for joint actions is not exactly great. Whenever we do a joint groundfish scallop committee, or a lot of our joint work to date is not exactly a great experience that we get a lot of production out of. So it's just a concern that we have tried it over in the past a couple times, and it hasn't exactly always been the most fruitful, timely experience. So we just would point that out, and there is a lot of pressure, I think, to get this work done, and we do have concerns that things with the groundfish mortality closures could get overlooked because people are just really wanting to speed ahead finally because it's been years with the habitat amendment. The analysis is finally, I think, where it needs to be and people are ready to go. Adding that, you could overlook some important issues about the groundfish mortality closures. So if the council's, our last point from the staff's perspective, if this is really the top priority that most people are feeling at the table right now, please be very serious when doing priorities in November. Whether you go with option 1, 2, 3, or 4, it will take some juggling of how we do things to date, and, you know, please be realistic with priorities for next year. The Groundfish Committee is already completely tapped out through 2011, so it's not like, you know, if you do option 3, for example, that the groundfish plan and PDT could start working on this right away. They can't until the end of the year. So here's your motion from January. It's a little hard to read on the screen, but it basically was the Habitat Committee's considering options to modify habitat closed areas on Georges Bank in southern New England. Given that the groundfish fishery is now managed with annual catch limits and accountability measures, it is the council's intent to prioritize a groundfish management action in the near future that would eliminate or modify the groundfish closure. So your motion that was tabled was actually mostly akin probably to option 2, which was basically to upfront give people a sense that you plan to work on that in 2012 So now today, after this presentation, does the council want to pursue an action to, in fact, modify the existing groundfish closed areas, and which action do you want to do that through, if you want to make that decision now or in priorities or what have you? That's all.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Far be it from me to correct Dee's presentation, but I believe the wording concerning that motion was that it was postponed. The motion was made, I think, by Dr. Pierce and seconded by me, which means that it's not actually sitting on the, doesn't have to be brought back at all. Somebody could, in fact, make it the exact same motion, or somebody could make a separate motion.
Just that it wasn't tabled, you mean? That it was,
yeah,
okay.
Because it was the wording of the way it was written was it was postponed.
Okay.
Thanks, Dee. Discussion? Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I'd like to thank Deidre and the staff for producing this work. We've been in a quandary with the Habitat Amendment for quite some time, and it reached a point where we needed to introduce clarity, and this report has certainly clarified the issues, and I think to that extent it's valuable. There are other parts of it, though, that I think are less valuable. And I think in the first place, the entire staff was not involved with it. The Habitat staff, PDT, and committee were not consulted prior to the production of this piece of work. As good as it is, it still takes a perspective, which is a perspective of the groundfish people and not a perspective of the habitat people, and I think that's an important point to make. And before I go further with that, I'd like to introduce a motion, since we don't have to deal with this motion at all. All right, then I would like to introduce a motion for consideration. This motion, just to clarify, this motion is a modification of Option 3. Option 3, I consulted with the members of the Habitat Committee, and we weren't happy with the wording of it because it didn't state exactly what we wanted to do. So that's the motion to expand the planned EFH action to modify the existing groundfish closures to be consistent with habitat actions. And if I get a second, I will go on with that.
Seconded by Doug Grout. Dave?
Okay. I'm not going to take these in any particular order, but the options that were presented, option one and option four, are completely unacceptable. Option two was described by Deidre as having a major con. That major con is beyond what we're willing to accept. To make this dependent upon a groundfish action, it almost certainly will not occur. As Deidre has said, the groundfish committee is completely engaged. And as we've heard from Paul in considerable detail, there's very little in the way of additional money and resources to do that. This actually, and the other thing is that by its nature, option two makes SASE moot at best. All of these things together make option two really not the direction that we want to go. As far as the option three is concerned, the rolling closures wouldn't be involved with this. They are not part of what the Habitat Committee is getting involved with, and this is why we purposely kept out of this the term mortality closure. What the Groundfish Committee wants to do with further closures that aren't related to habitat isn't really our business. So we want to retain the habitat. The sense of the Habitat Amendment as being an omnibus amendment. And in regard to that, if we look at the scoping, look at Goal 6 of the scoping document, it's very clear on how this is to be done. I see no reason to go out for additional scoping. What went out to scoping for Goal 6 was that the omnibus amendment is to integrate and optimize measures to minimize the adverse impacts to EFH across all council-managed FMPs. That went out to scoping already. and should need no further scoping. And what we've got in the report here is the implication that ground fishery building closures could not be modified in the omnibus amendment. That is clearly not true. The omnibus amendment is to modify all council FMPs. Will it be work required? Yes. But as far as initiating new actions, option three does not anticipate new actions. The scallop people really, they don't, there's no action required there because they have no year-round closures, and their closures will be geared to the habitat closures. And as Deidre has pointed out, it currently appears that we are going to be opening a considerable amount of area from habitat reasons that the scallop industry has long sought to get into. And in fact, this report actually shows us exactly the kind of changes that would be made. We don't really want to be producing an amendment that then depends upon another action by a different committee that may, in fact, not happen for a long time. We can move this a lot more quickly than we can if we're looking at two separate actions from two separate committees requiring extensive additional resources. As far as the possibility of overlooking things, all the stocks now are under ACLs and AMs. So that really should preclude the risk of having overlooked issues. Closures in general should be either habitat or spawning closures. And spawning closures, in fact, when we finally get to the point where we can identify such things, spawning closures are, in fact, related to habitat. So these are the kinds of closures that we would anticipate. And I hesitate to even use the word closure, because what I see happening here is a reorientation of the current actions to open areas for the exact reason that Chad brought up yesterday. We have extensive real estate right now that is closed improperly and is, in fact, counterproductive. What we are trying to do here is to reorient the closures so that they are in the right place. And I think the fastest, easiest, quickest way to do that is with option three. None of it's easy. None of us are under the impression that it's easy. But as the Habitat Committee has the appropriate resources, we can do this quickly. I anticipate having a number of meetings that will result in having options on the table, perhaps by June, but certainly no later than September. And then we can move on and get this done right. Thank you.
Paul Howard.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to make a small point, David. When you mentioned that the Habitat staff and committees were not involved in this, if you recall, at the January council meeting, we had this discussion, and if we had gone through committees and PDTs and everything else, this wouldn't be done and ready. And the idea was for the staff to frame the issues and come back to the council in April. So Michelle did meet with us and discuss this with us. So all staffs are involved in this. But before this report, absolutely. All of the staffs are involved in this. But we didn't go to any of the committees, and we did this report and also the other work with the amendments and frameworks and everything. So this is a Herculean effort, and I applaud it.
Yeah, I didn't mean to denigrate anything you've done, Paul. It's a superb job, and I didn't expect anything as good. And I am particularly happy that it clarified the issue so well, and it really did. But the Habitat Committee at the current time just simply it doesn't agree with the staff conclusion. That's all. That's all I was saying.
Dave Gethin.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I agree with everything that Dave said. I think the only way we're ever going to crack this nut is to do it as one group. I don't think having separate committees work on this will work. That'll actually drag out the timeline because people will establish turf and people who want to exploit divisions within the group will very effectively move in to do that. I think the only way we can get this done is to hold everybody's feet to the fire, and I'm sorry if some flesh gets scorched. That's, what do they call that, collateral damage? I mean, I think that we need the disparate people that swirl around the habitat debate, all of them, whether it's groundfish people or scallop people or environmental groups or whoever, in the room at the same time to get on with this and get it done. I've been working on this the entire time I've been on the council. You know, glaciers melt faster now than we move. And I think the only way to get this done is to have those people come and sit in one room at one time and hash it out once and for all and get on with it.
Doug Grout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I seconded this motion because this is something that I feel is very important that we try and move forward with. As a member of the Habitat Committee, I felt some of our hands were tied on some of the things that we wanted to do on the Habitat Committee to reduce the negative impacts of fishing gear on habitat. As you look at the Z Realized, the information on Z Realized, just by having reductions in effort over the past few years, we've already realized a significant amount of reduction on the impact of habitat on habitat by fishing gear. One of the key things that I've heard is that trying to increase catch per unit effort and thus decreasing the amount of time that the gear is in contact with the bottom is another way. And I felt if we could look at things holistically, we could realize both increases in catch per unit effort and at the same time protect sensitive habitats. So I support this motion, and I hope the rest of the council will.
Jim Fair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with the previous three speakers that the cleanest way to do this is to do it all at once. I think that the worst thing we could do is start making piecemeal changes to areas. And doing it that way would cause undue concern on the part of the public, and people need to see the bottom line. They need to see what the end point is going to be when this whole process is finished. So I think making all these area-related moves at the same time makes the most sense.
Sally?
Likewise, I support the motion. I think the only way we're going to get this decision done is by having all these areas, habitat, groundfish, closed areas on the same map at the same time. It's the only way we'll be able to make a decent decision. And even if it means delaying the habitat amendment by another few months at this point, that's what needs to happen so we can get over this final hurdle. Thank you.
Anyone wishing on the council wishing to speak against the motion? Paul Howard.
Not speaking against it, of course, Mr. Chairman, but just I don't know what your expectations are, but I think staff, we've talked about that's the best thing. The best way to approach things is to do it together. However, you need the resources to do that, and we've got, I don't know if your expectations are to begin in 2012. That's one expectation, but on 2011, on our work plate right now is an amendment for accumulation limits, workshops, the new GARM results of that and putting that in place. So there's absolutely no way, given the current workload in groundfish, that we have the resources to start work on this jointly in 2011. And so then if you look at 2012, if you want a joint action, you really have to look at what else you're going to task groundfish with. So that's the way I look at it. This is about resources and timing. And I think we all agree it's best to do things once and collectively. But, you know, right now we've got a lot on our plate, and you've got to adjust the plate in 2012 if you want to do it jointly.
Dr. Pierce.
I'll speak against the motion. When we met in January to decide what to do, the proper strategy to use to approach this very difficult problem, we did request staff to do a lot of hard work, summarize the issues, the pros and the cons. And frankly, we don't move forward, we don't accomplish much unless we have good staff advice and then good staff support. They're the ones that have to do all the difficult work behind the scenes and in front of the scenes. Their views are critical, and I respect them. As a consequence, in light of what was just said by the executive director and, of course, the options, the recommendation provided by the staff, I'm going to support their preferred alternative, the second option, and not this one, even though I do recognize all of the good points made by those who have supported this particular motion.
Dave Preble.
Yeah, thank you. I was a little confused by just one thing that Paul said. I agree with what he said, except for the one thing, and that is the word joint action. This is going to be a Habitat Committee action, not a joint action with the Groundfish Committee.
But I meant all the PDT analysis and PDT work to accomplish that. You need the Groundfish PDT and Tom and the Groundfish Committee to address the mortality objectives of the groundfish closures. I mean, it's one action, but it's joint committees, right? No? Joint PDTs?
Who's?
Oh.
Anyone else in the council? Pat.
Follow-up to that, I guess I'm confused, too. So you want to talk about modifying the groundfish closed areas in the habitat amendment?
The under goal 6, was to minimize adverse impacts to EFH across all council-managed FMPs. I'm not sure I see the conflict here. I'm missing something.
Sally?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously the Habitat Committee will consider it, but this is a groundfish action as much as it's an action modifying any of the other FMPs. So whether we do this or not, there's going to be an amendment to the groundfish plan. I think the reality is that it's going to need the effort of the groundfish PDT in addition to and in concert with the habitat PDT. That's kind of the whole point in this, is to get it all in the same place at the same time, because it's been impossible for the Habitat Committee to make any decisions not knowing what's going to happen with the groundfish closures. So it has to be done together. That's my understanding of the whole point of this. And, I see that Tom is looking kind of confused about this, but I don't know how else this can be done. And that's the whole point of, I understand, as the option 3 that was put forward by staff, albeit not supported by staff as their preferred approach, but the whole point was to bring both together, which is the problem that we're trying to solve by doing it this way, bringing everybody together, the two PDTs, the resources that they bring to the table, so that we understand and have a complete picture of what the changes are going to be to closures and access.
The alternatives the staff has brought to us in the white paper are all viable alternatives. They wouldn't put them in there, I don't think, if they weren't. But they have pros and cons. And I think what we're really debating here isn't the form that the action takes, whether it's two separate actions that link up at some point in the future or one action. The real crux of the matter is the timing. When we expect or want this action to... when we want to initiate the start of this discussion and this action, and when we can, because as the executive director has pointed out, we already have commitments on the books, we have priorities set already, and I think everybody wants to arrive at the same place. The question is, what route do we take, and can we all go together? Do we take two different routes and link up in the future? It's a resource issue as much as anything else. Tonight, staff hands up D, and then Tom.
Exactly what I was going to say, and the only thing I would add is that the staff, I don't want it to be perceived as against putting it together. We absolutely think that makes a lot of sense. Our concerns were all about timing and logistics, and when you have one hand, the Habitat Committee saying you're going to have measures in September, when we know that would mean no groundfish involvement at all, can occur before September, that's a problem.
I guess I'm a little confused about the language of the motion, and I'm not sure if the language of the motion is supposed to reflect our understanding of what we meant by option three or something different. Our understanding of option three would be sort of a holistic look at closures for whatever reason, whether they're spawning closures or mortality closures or habitat closures in one amendment. The motion seems to suggest that what's being proposed is something simpler, which is develop whatever the habitat options are, closures or whatever, and then, you know, just modify the existing groundfish mortality, the groundfish year-round closures to match without really considering whether that addresses whatever groundfish needs are out there. So I'm a little confused on whether the motion is really suggesting option three or is suggesting something different than option three.
Dave?
Yeah, it is obviously somewhat different from option three. And our intent is to modify the existing groundfish closures to be consistent with habitat actions, but it's really under the supposition that closures should be either for habitat or spawning, and that was why I said that. You're right, this is not exactly option three. We didn't intend to follow that exact route.
Terry.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had gravitated towards supporting option three. To me, it was implicit that both of the habitat and the groundfish PDTs would be working together to analyze the possible modifications of the groundfish closed areas. This makes sense to me to expand the EFH action rather than having separate actions. I'd be very uneasy about additional closures or measures for habitat without opening up the mortality areas. We're trying to achieve OY, and I think it would be hugely punitive to the industry.
Jimmy.
Yeah, I was kind of looking towards option three. Well, in here, I'd like to say that, to me, option one and option two are unacceptable. There's no measure of how much lost yield we'd have by having greatly expanded real estate closed on Georgia's Bank. We are falling well short of achieving OI, and this certainly wouldn't help that situation. As far as having the Groundfish Committee and the Habitat Committee work together, I think in the groundfish discussion we'll be having later, there is something about postponing some work on the accumulation caps because we don't have anything to work with, and that could potentially free up some groundfish assets to work on this between now and September, and then in September we can realign our priorities, or November, so that that's leading me to option three. And again, one and two is just, you know, we cannot have expanded real estate closed. I mean, that's just, you know, we might as well give up the fisheries. Thank you.
Okay, so you don't favor this motion, you favor option three. Okay. Anyone else on the council? Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. After this discussion, I would make a motion to substitute option three for this.
Is there a second? Seconded by Terry Stockwell. Discussion on the motion to substitute. Terry.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I heard Tom say that the analysis that the groundfish PDT was going to undertake would also include that of the rolling closures, and that is something I think that needs to be done as well. Part of the entire package, it makes it a more attractive motion for me to support.
Okay. Dave?
Yeah, I have no objection to this change. The only reason I worded it, you know, the way that we had it worded was to try to make it a little cleaner, but this is fine.
Anything further on the motion to substitute? Chris Kellogg?
When we look at the omnibus timelines, there's actually a fallback timeline that was felt to be perhaps a little more realistic. It's really showing implementation in December, with the council deciding on EFH alternatives for the DEIS in this January. So I think that gives a little time after we submit the specifications package. But I think at that point there might be some time for the Groundfish PDT and committee to work on those issues, provided that there are not other priorities assigned to them at that time.
Thanks, Chris. Mike Leary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support this motion. We really shouldn't get hung up on timelines. We haven't met one in I don't know how long. And instead of putting dates on there, we should just put long, long time.
Mark.
So the way I read this, beyond opening potential habitat closed areas to scallop fishery, this option doesn't do anything else with or for the scallop fishery, right? I mean, being an omnibus amendment, it could potentially deal with areas closed to the scallop fishery or future areas closed to the scallop fishery, but it's only considering the groundfish areas, which the habitat area, which may be open in the future to the scallop fishery, but nothing else related to that fishery, right?
Right. We're not addressing rotational management areas or anything of that nature in this amendment.
But there was one potential habitat area in the Great South Channel that, if closed, would impact the scallop fishery.
That's true. Dee?
Yeah, and the only other thing about that, if, you know, we knew the EFH areas were going to disappear and the groundfish year-round mortality closures were going to disappear as a result of this action, let's not say we know what's going to go in their place, but imagine they just both disappear, then the northern edge would be an open area if nothing was done. Is that the best thing for the scallop fishery? Maybe. Or maybe it should be a rotational area, so you'd want to have a scallop action actually in conjunction with something like this to control access in there instead of just having it an open area to really optimize that yield. You might want a controlled area there instead. And ignoring the issue with the channel is a concern. Nobody knows what those LISA clusters will be, but they could be closures. The document has alternatives now that they are. So it's not a scallop action because it's, you know, but de facto, if whatever it is decided affects all the fisheries at once.
Much better said.
Anyone in the audience wishing to speak against the motion? Against it? Ron, you're against it? Come on up, Ron.
Yeah, I just, the point, it came in late. I was going to say, hey, where's scallops? I really, you know, initially I was against the omnibus amendment way back because I thought each plan should deal with its habitat impacts. But then we went through this Amendment 10, Amendment 13 debacle about trying to match things up, which now has taken us to Amendment 15 years later to finally make those adjustments. The actions in the scallop plan have to take place at the same time, probably through this one action. So the groundfish lines and scallop lines have to be dealt with. We're depending on rotational management to deal with our habitat issues. What we need to have on George's Bank, once these lines start getting adjusted around, our new scallop access areas in place, and the management measures such as trip limitations will be our way to adjust our impact on the environment. So redrawing scallop access areas has to take place at the same time. And we tried to do that with Amendment 11, 10, and 13, and remember, we ended up with a major problem. So I would be concerned not addressing the access area boundaries. That's our tool for controlling habitat impact on Georgia's Bank from the scallop fishery. So that's, I think the point that's been brought up is very important.
Anyone wishing to speak against the motion on the board? Okay, back to the council. Council members? Ready for the question on the motion to substitute? All those in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous, 17. We need to vote again on the main motion as substituted. All those in favor, raise your hand. Opposed? 1. Motion as main motion to substitute carries 16-1. Anything else under this issue? Okay. We'll move into the Groundfish Committee report behind tab 3. And while we're waiting for